This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Welcome, gather round the fireside and listen to a tale of Fionn Mac Cool, Cool Cullen, Deirdre of the Sorrows, Gron, your wail. From giants right down to fairies, of both the drooping and solitary, and close to us sometimes scary. Anything goes by the fireside. Yeah. Fireside, the Puka fireside, the Merrow fireside. Kings and queens fighting heroes, don't you run from the fun, there's no need to hide. Sit by the fireside. Fireside. Yeehaw.
Hello and welcome to Fireside, the Irish storytelling podcast. Each episode of Fireside, we take a story from folklore, mythology, retell it, have a chat about the tale itself and about the craft, the culture and history of storytelling. My name is Kevin C. Olihan. I am your host and your Fireside Bard. Welcome to episode 188. Eight of Fireside. Today on the Irish Storytelling Podcast, the Irish Storytelling Podcast, we have a tale of the Fianna of Erin. This is the tale of Oscar and the Green Blade. But first, a very big welcome along to any new and returning listeners. If you enjoy this episode, why don't you head right back to the beginning, nearly 4 years ago and 188 episodes worth of Fireside content and see what we've been building up to the journey so far. And if you are a returning listener, thank you so much for your continued support. All the normal things. Follow me over on Instagram at FiresideBard. Email me at thefiresidebard@gmail.com for any business or personal inquiries, or even just to say hello. Those are the best places to get in touch. Ways you can support the podcast more directly is you can, of course, tell someone about it, tell a friend, spread the good name of the podcast. You can buy my poetry book, Garden Sea, A Neo-Myth of Home, in paperback from the Head Stuff website or in Kindle form from Amazon. We can ship the paperback anywhere around the world. All of the links are in the description below, attached in here. And if you want to support the podcast directly, you can do so by joining Head Stuff Plus for as little as €5 a month, although you can pay more if you want and gain bonus content, not just for Fireside, but for all of the podcasts on the Head Stuff Podcast Network, and more there are of those each and every month. Thank you so much. No hard sells on any of those. I am recording to you from my home studio back in County Wicklow. I'm still home for the next couple of months, at least, settled back in a little bit. I've been popping back over. I was over in Yorkshire in the UK over the weekend, and now I am back here recording these next couple. I've been quite under the weather over the last couple of days, so I wouldn't ideally be recording today, but I'm hoping that my vocal quality will not have suffered too much. I'm feeling a bit better today, but that's currently where I am. But the story for this week, most importantly, this continues our look at John Hawkins Simpson's incredible adaptation of the poem of Oisin the Bard, the link of which is in the description below as always now. And this finally gives a title, a kind of named story in its own way, to my favourite, my MVP of the Fianna, which is the grandson of Fionn Mac Cool, Oscar. This is a continuation, a standalone continuation of sorts, of the story we did 2 weeks ago, which was the wonderfully titled Hill of Slaughter. But here we have a follow-up to that, which we will chat more about afterwards, of course. But this is the tale of Oscar and the Green Blade on Fireside. Oscar and the Green Blade. Little Hugh stood on the eastern shores of Era. The blood from the Hill of Slaughter had ran and was diluting within the Irish Sea. but more ships were approaching the island, and they were not merchants or pleasure crafts. These ships were sailing aggressively for war. The youngest son of Fionn MacCool was approached on the shore by a tall, dark man with long, flowing silver hair, an eye patch across one eye, and carrying the largest and longest sword neither Little Hugh nor any Fenian warrior had ever seen the match of. Stranger than its size was the sword's colour. The blade was not silver, or even gold or rusted bronze. It was green. There appeared to be mixed metal within the sword that made it seem enchanted and certainly formidable. The stranger spoke. "Where is Fionn MacCool?"
"Who wants to know?" said Little Hugh.
"I will not reveal my identity to anyone but the leader of the Fianna."
"Very well. My father is Fionn, and he is mourning on the Hill of Slaughter, where Tolia the Cat King fell. Please, guide me to him, son of Fionn."
"The name's Little Hugh," said Little Hugh. Fionn MacCool had just buried Princess Neem. She had fallen dead after witnessing her own husband's death, as well as those of 1,000 Fenian men. It was after her that the Hill of Slaughter had been named. Little Hugh and the stranger approached the Fenian lord. "Fionn MacCool, by whose hand did Tolia the Great fall?" Fionn looked at the stranger and said, "I would not divulge such information to anyone who will not even announce their own identity. My name is Mergoc of the Green Blade. Tolia was my brother by marriage, and I have come to seek revenge for his death." "Tolia was an unwelcome invader in Era," said Fionn. "We gave safe refuge to his wife, and Tolia came to claim her. As the Fianna always do, we protected the innocent and the defenseless." Mergoc did not believe this. "You dare to lie and claim you protected my own sister when she too lies dead by Fenian hands?" "That looks bad," said Fionn, "but I swear by the gods that Princess Neem died of heartbreak at the sight of the battle. She came to no harm from any of our warriors." But Mergoc would not believe the truth. He was out to dip his green blade in Fenian blood. "I will not be satisfied until every one of the Fianna lie dead. All, that is, but two."
"Which two?" asked Fionn.
"Little Hugh, as he is but a child and blameless of any crimes, and Gull MacMorna, whose nobility and honour has reached even my ears."
"You are right not to blame Little Hugh," said Fionn. "And Gull MacMorna may have killed my father, but he has been as valiant and long-standing an ally of me since I have taken over as leader. But not one of the Fianna will die for the blameless crime of the death of Tolia and Neem. Our greatest warrior will fight you in single combat."
"And who is your greatest warrior?" asked Mergoc.
"I am." From behind the Fenian leader stepped Oscar of the Dreadful Deeds. "It is by my hand that Tolia fell. He fought bravely and fiercely, but the stamina of the stag bested the quickness of the cat." Mergoc smiled darkly. "It is right that you should fall by the green blade, Oscar. Know that never has another man made a mark on my skin."
"Mark on your skin?" laughed Oscar. "No man has ever knocked me from my feet." Oscar drew his sword and spear and charged at Mergoc and his green blade. The Fianna knew this was going to be a long battle,
The green blade was clearly a better weapon than any on the island of Era, save for the mythical Gay Bulga of Cuchulainn or the sword Answerer of King Lú Lávada. But Uskar was faster and stronger than any stroke of the green blade. If he lost a weapon, the Fianna had 1,000 ready to throw to him. While Uskar and Mergoc fought, Fionn one by one summoned the greatest of the Fianna. Gull MacMorna approached. "Gull," said Fionn, "if Uskar falls in battle against such a great foe, the Fianna will be in great danger. Will you fight?" "No love have you ever had for me, Fionn Mac Cumhail, and you would have me die by your grandson's butcher," answered the leader of Clan Morna. "Only respect have I had for you since you stood aside when I became your commander. I have made my peace with you slaying my father, but Mergoc has vowed not to harm little Hugh or you specifically. If you fought him in battle, there would be no danger except for the loss of Mergoc's honor with his life." "If you command it, I will fight. No battle will be refused by one of Clan Morna for the Fianna of Era." Fionn received similar vows from Diarmuid, Caoilte, Oisin, and even begrudgingly, Conan Mhaill. At the end of the first day of fighting, neither Mergoc nor Uskar had made a mark on each other. Neither had ever lost a fight, and here they may have each met their match. Still, neither of them doubted the outcome. "Rest tonight, Mergoc," said Uskar, "for it will be the last night your blood does not run on the hill of slaughter." "No, no, Uskar," said he of the green blade. "Era is not where I die. It is where you will fall by my hand." The following dawn, the battle began anew. Uskar needed to draw blood. The savage warrior within him craved it. All of the Fianna now trembled before Mergoc. All except for Uskar. Today he proved himself not only the fiercest, but bravest of his brethren. And with that calm, collected confidence, Uskar parried, dodged, and lunged past the green blade and sliced the side of Mergoc. As the warrior's blood began to stream, Mergoc said, "Enjoy that hit, Uskar. It will be your last." Grasping the green blade in both hands, Uskar's foe charged, and Uskar was on the back foot. Fionn's grandson grasped a shield from the battlefield and held it high above his head as the green blade came down, smashed and splintered the shield with its shaft coming down hard, smacking, slicing, and knocking Uskar off his feet and prostrate on the ground. It all happened so fast. The greatest of the Fianna, who had never so much been brought to the ground, now lying motionless. Fionn suppressed his anger and rage and sorrow for his beloved grandson. Era and the Fianna needed him to remain a leader. But Conan Mhaill called out, "Uskar, this cannot be how you die. When you have defeated all who have dared approach you, you have never been my friend, but you have always been my better. Now get up so that I can be the one to kill you." All the Fianna were incredibly moved by Conan Mhaill's display. He had never complimented anyone, much less Uskar. He feared for all of Era should Uskar fall. And Uskar heard. Just as quickly as he'd been knocked down, he of the dreadful deeds was back on his feet with green blood in his eyes. He kicked Mergoc square in the ribs, and the green blade landed in Uskar's own hand. Then Fionn's grandson cut every part of his foe open, keeping him alive until every inch of him was running blood red. Satisfied, Uskar cut the head from Mergoc and dropped the green blade on the hill of slaughter. The three cheers the Fianna let out were cut short by the sight of Uskar collapsing once more. He was gravely injured, and Fionn sent druids to carry his grandson home and tend to his wounds. Unfortunately for the Fianna, Mergoc was dead, but now approached his two sons, Círdan and Leagon. And it was decided that two brothers would fight two brothers. Conan Mhaill and Gull MacMorna descended the Hill of Slaughter, ready for a fight. Gull took on Círdan and found him every bit the warrior his father had been. Mergoc had promised to not kill Gull, but his son would offer the Morni warrior no such honor. Gull was old and slow, but no less strong or fierce, and cut Círdan in half before removing his head. Conan Mhaill had been engaged by Leogon in taunting. "It was inconsiderate of you to face me today, bald man." "Not as inconsiderate as the warrior who comes behind you," said Conan. When Leogon turned to check, Conan Mhaill cut his head off. "Conan," scolded Gull, "that was a dishonorable way to kill your foe." "We're at war," said Conan. "These men invaded Era. Who cares how we win, as long as we win?" Conan soon got his answer, as a queen arrived on the Hill of Slaughter and approached Fionn. "Tell me, leader of the Fianna, where is Mergoc of the Green Blade?" "He lies fallen by the hand of Usker," said Fionn. "And his sons, Círdan and Leogon? They too have attacked and were defeated by warriors of the Fianna." The queen broke down and howled. "My life, my husband and my children, slain by the treacherous Fianna." It was then that Grainne, wife of Fionn Mac Cumhail, came forward. "I am sorry for your loss. I have a husband and I have children, and I cannot imagine the woe you are experiencing. But you must not speak of treachery, for your family invaded this island. My people merely defended it. My family came to take revenge for the death of Talia and Neem. Neem came to Era to escape Talia. Fionn and the Fianna protected her. Talia pursued, and Usker defeated him in single combat. It was a nobler death than he deserved, for he killed 1,000 of the best of the Fianna. Neem died of a broken heart. But the queen was inconsolable and cursed the Fianna." Conan Mhaill was not having this. "I will not have the honor of the Fianna called into question," and he drew his sword on the queen. Usker of the Dreadful Deeds arose from his sickbed and knocked Conan back with his sword. "Have you lost your mind, Conan?" asked Usker. "The queen is misguided, but she did not slay any of the Fianna." The queen and Grainne continued to talk, and the queen would not be satisfied until she had witnessed 30 of the best of the Fianna fight honorably against 30 of her own chosen horde. The 60 warriors were chosen, and the next morning they were all ready for the fight. Conan, Gull, Diarmaid, Oisin, Usker, and even Fionn were not just fighting to defend. They were fighting for the honor of the Fianna, an honor that had been brought into question. They were no band of savage pirates. They were Era's first line of defense, and the 30 of the Fianna slew the 30 foes without a single loss on their side. The queen's loss had deepened, but she could not doubt the nobility and courage with which the Fianna had fought. She sailed for home and told how her husband and sons had sailed for Era and had been brought down by the greatest warriors the world would ever know. To be continued.
The podcast studios are opening their doors to everyone this Culture Night. Come see the place where your favourite Headstuff Podcast Network shows are made. Get behind-the-scenes access, learn about production, and record your very own five-minute podcast. This is an opportunity not to be missed. Join us Friday the 23rd of September. Register on eventbrite.ie or see the Culture Night website for more details. We look forward to seeing you there.
And there we have the tale of Usker and the Green Blade on Fireside, and I hope you all enjoyed it. Yes, so last week, or 2 weeks ago, the last time we did a myth, we did the story of the Hill of Slaughter, in which a princess comes to Ireland seeking the help and protection of the Fianna, and she is pursued by the Cat King, her husband, Talia. He comes to pursue her, the Fianna defend her, and Oscar defeats this this Cat King. So immediately following that, this story picks up exactly where the last one left off, and we have Little Hugh, our new MVP, getting his second outing, and love that he got this moment at the beginning, welcoming this this character in my head who kind of looks like a cross between, I'm imagining like Sephiroth from Final Fantasy, like a figure from Final Fantasy or Square Enix coming through, kind of mixed with like a Corlys Velaryon from House of the Dragon, if anyone's watching that. Kind of mix of these two kind of figures emerging through. That's the image I had in my head for this fierce, fierce warrior. Because I needed to be clear of my image for this character, because he is perceived as this greatest threat to Oscar. It's the one time that, considering it is a kind of, Oscar is the deus ex machina of the Fianna in a lot of these, especially in these recent stories, he is the secret weapon. He's the nuke. He's the dragon to just bring in and wipe everyone else out. This was the one story where, when I was reading it first, I was really thought that Oscar was a goner. And that was in no small part to the fact that in this version, in the John Hawkins Simpsons version, I've spoke before about how it's framed entirely as a dialogue between Oisín and St. Patrick on Oisín's deathbed, when it is 300 years after the Fianna and he has returned from Tir na n Og, and they constantly go back, and there's a lot of potential in it, but it still suffers from a lot of the stuffy and outdated quality that some of the older adaptations of this myth have, I think personally, and that is just this added reverence that they had. And the dialogue between Oisín and Patrick is incredibly interesting, except that it mostly just amounts to like one constant argument, which is the fundamental one of like whether or not the Fianna were greater than God, basically, or whether or not the Fionn and the Fianna are in hell because they worshipped pagan gods. This is just the back and forth that Oisín is constantly saying that his grandson Oscar and Fionn and Gull and Conan, all of these were better than Jesus and God. And St. Patrick's going, no way, they're not. They're all burning in hell. And that's what it amounts to. So there's potential in it, but it does get a little bit repetitive, as a lot of these older bardic tales can, because the repetition, the chorus, was how these older bards remembered hours and hours of material. But here we have Little Hugh and Mergoc arriving, and this great green blade, and he has come to take revenge on Talia. I added a personal stake by making him Princess Niamh's brother, because it's never really explained why he cares. It doesn't even say that he's a fellow countryman, as it doesn't really say where Talia is from. It says that Princess Niamh is a daughter of a king of Greece, which is also a common theme in a lot of these John Hawkins Simpsons versions of these stories, which are translated literally from the Irish. And so it amounts to another single combat. This was, believe it or not, this was about 40 or 50 pages condensed to a 12 to 15 minute story. As surprising as that may seem from it, that's how much it is drawn out, and that's how much the battle is planned. But it does ultimately break down to this single combat between Oscar and Mergoc, and I don't feel anything has been lost for the story that I was interested in telling, than just getting across that this is this greatest of fights. And this idea that neither had ever been defeated, never had been blood drawn or had even been knocked off, but that this was the one time that Oscar was nearly defeated, nearly killed. And that comes across when he does eventually kill Mergoc and can't even fight his sons, in which we get this McMorna bowl, where we finally get to have Conan Mhaill and Gull McMorna fight, which was my addition as well, because you have... There's in a lot of these stories, there's a case of it makes me think of the ensigns in like early Star Trek, as in those early Star Trek episodes. It would always be the core cast and then one unnamed extra going. It's a classic trope in sci-fi and fantasy, and in all things really, in action movies of all, there's always like some unnamed faceless person who's always the first to get killed by the monster, first to get killed by the alien. So there's a huge amount of that naturally in mythology, because that's where a lot of it comes from. But I I've removed or streamlined as much of that as possible, because I like to keep the focus on the main characters. So I had this idea of having this finally see the brothers of McMorna fight together and fight. But that is actually the Conan fight is from directly from John Hawkins Simpson, directly lifted, that he basically says, "Look behind you," and then cuts his head off. And it is an incredibly dishonorable death, but it's his argument, I think, is fair enough. It's like, well, we came to win, who cares? We're defending our land, who cares how we do it? And you also got a nice moment. I got a nice natural moment to see the nobility of Gaul versus the treachery of Conan Well, considering they are brothers and ultimately villains in the Fionn tale, because it is Gaul who kills Cúil, but is the highly, highly respected one and the one who Margoc has heard of and will not fight. But so the two McMorna, they fight and defeat the two sons. They defeat Círdan and Leogán. And following that, we have the arrival of the mother, the wife of Margoc and the mother of Leogán and Círdan. And she breaks down in these tears for and wonders where they are. And we have this incredibly long lament, this keen from this queen that does take up another entire chapter basically worth of like, oh, my life, my love, where should I find another, all of that, and all of these curses on the Fianna. And this is where the story takes another interesting turn, I think, in that it then becomes a question of honor, which is the thing of which the Fianna are never in question. And that's what the interesting turn is, that this queen is accusing the Fianna of being treacherous, which they have reason to, particularly from how the most recent person was killed, which is Leogán having his head cut off when he was turned around, the oldest trick of the book of look behind you. But overall, of course, the Fianna's question, honour is never in question. And that becomes the big deal, because that is all they are, their name. I mean, that is why the Battle of Ventry happens, is because all around the world, these are the most honourable and greatest of the warriors in the world. And so this queen, who had not borne witness to all of these deaths, she demands satisfaction. And then we get another very interesting turn, is that we meet Grainne, who we haven't met since the pursuit of Diarmaid and Grainne all the way back in, Jesus, episode like 15, I think it was. As a refresher for those who haven't listened to it, either in a while or at all, Grainne was a young, beautiful woman who was betrothed to an older Fionn Mac Cúil, and who, depending on the version, was seduced by or hypnotized Diarmaid of the Love Spot as the most beautiful man in the world to run away with him and leave Fionn. And Fionn gave this great pursuit, at the end of which Diarmaid dies, but there actually isn't much mention of what happens to Grainne. Either she dies with him, or she escapes, or in this case, she evidently marries Fionn. But these stories seem to exist, I've said before, in an almost like parallel universe in the multiverse of the Fianna, because Diarmaid is still alive here, and Grainne isn't introduced until the pursuit of Diarmaid and Grainne. So if Fionn and her are married and Diarmaid is still alive, this seems to be in a totally different world, which happens a huge, huge amount in mythologies. There's contradictions all the time because they're so fragmented and miscellaneous. But in this world, Grainne is Fionn's wife. So she never objected to the marriage, it seems. And she obviously is the mother of Little Hugh. So she's why we have Little Hugh here, because when we had another young son of Fionn Mac Cúil, who I had never encountered before the Hill of Slaughter, I'd wondered who his mother was. And here we have her revelation and her conversation with the queen, asking her to not bring the Fianna's honour into question. But the queen will not be satisfied until she has seen 30 of her own men fight nobly against 30 of the Fianna. And then in this final push, the Fianna are now no longer even fighting just for the defence of Eire. They're fighting for their own honour, which gives them even more of a fury and a rage to fight with. And every one of them wins their battle. And then, unfortunately for this queen, she has to sail home, having lost her husband, her two sons, and now 30 other warriors entirely by her own hand, but entirely on her own behalf. But at the very least, she's able to go back and tell that her husband and her two sons and all of her other countrymen and warriors died at the hands of the greatest warriors in the world. So it's what I continue to love about these tales is that even though there's quite a simplicity to the baddie arrives, baddie fights, baddie dies, we get moments which, in fairness, like I beef up and make my own decisions of and decide what I want to focus on or not. But a huge amount of that is coming from these versions I'm adapting of these moments for the individual characters. I can't express enough how lovely it is getting to see more of Oscar and Conan and Gull, and getting to meet people like Little Hugh, and getting to see Grania in this new light. It makes them all seem very character-driven as well as mythological. And that's what continues to be really, really enjoyable about them. But with that, I think I will wrap things up, because I hope you all enjoyed this tale, as with the last one, and all of them, in fact. We've certainly one more, as we come up to episode 190, we've one more tale of the Fianna to go from this, at the very least. I had thought that this one would actually be split into two, but I was able to condense it enough and still say everything I wanted to say. The story was, I felt, able to be told. The version that I wanted to tell, anyway, was able to be told within one episode, leaving room for a story called Fionn Mac Cumhall and the Chase, as episode 190, which will be very nice, rounded off very nicely. And then, following that, we'll have a folktale next week. Next week will be the tale of, oh yes, The Lucky Guest. Look forward to another Far Darrick, another fairy fairy tale. I have to always say that, a fairy fairy tale rather than a fairy tale. Yeah, you get what I mean. A fairy folk tale. Let's go with that one there. The Lucky Guest we'll have next week. Then we'll have Fionn Mac Cumhall and the Chase. And then as we come into October, I'm going to try and find a whole month worth of spooky, scary ghost stories. Lots of banshees and jack-o'-lanterns and will-o'-the-wisps and all that for all of October. We'll hopefully have a good month. And then we'll see how we're building up to episode 200 and the 4-year anniversary of Fireside. Plenty more to come for the end of 2022, and I hope you'll be there with us for all of it. So please follow me on over at Instagram at FiresideBard, email me at thefiresidebard@gmail.com, buy my book Garden Sea, all the links are in the description below, paperback or and Kindle version at Amazon. Support the podcast at Headstuff Plus for as little as €5 a month. I'll see you all, you'll hear me all next time, and remember, wherever you are and wherever you go, you can always join me by the fireside.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.